Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's guest is a nutritionist and chiropractor and parent, Dr. Lisa Solcenti, known to her patients and many of her followers on the internet as Dr. Lisa. She's got a great website at drlisasolcenti.com. I'll spell it. It's S-U-L-S-E-N-T-I. DrLisaSolcenti.com. And her latest article, appropriately for the season, as we're preparing to celebrate Passover and Easter, is How the Easter Bunny and His Peeps Go Commando on Our Children. And in part one, we talked a little bit about the behavioral effects of all those chemicals and dyes and sugar that are in those holiday treats. Actually, this is prompted by an inquiry on your website. Dr. Lisa, I'm worried about all the candy that my child will receive from the Easter Bunny. My main concern is that most of the candy he loves has ingredients that I hear are harmful and banned in other countries. Is this true? And if so, what can my son have in his Easter basket? And so we went on to answer some of those questions. And also, Dr. Lisa has a previous post, Halloween Toxic Candy Post, which we covered at Halloween time. So one of the things that we didn't really cover, is the influence of GMOs, genetically modified organisms. This is a big controversial issue because some people say, hey, you know, this is just progress. Don't get in the way of progress. We need to feed the world. These products are really no different than previously agriculturally hybridized and developed foods. So what's the big deal? Get over it. What's your take?
Well, I've never liked them, and I feel that I'll go into why. But really, what they are is a genetic material that's been altered, and they're using genetic and engineering techniques to alter it. And many crops today are genetically modified in the food and the drinks. And what my whole feeling about them, because I know it's controversial, is that it's considered another antigen that we talked about in the first part of the call. And the GMO is in the food, it comes into the body, and the body recognizes it as a foreign substance. And so from what I'm reading in the research, definitely that's relinked because I have a background with the autism world, is that when an antigen comes into the gut, such as a GMO, the body is going to respond as an inflammation. And what that means is that the body's recognized it as foreign, it's going to start attacking it. And then the whole immune system kicks in and starts attacking a GMO. And what you get is you can get things like leaky gut, which is when you're going to have bad things start going over blood barriers, and it can start systemically affecting the body, which means it's going to affect the whole entire body. And for a child like mine that is on the autism spectrum, we can have neurological problems get worse. We can have attention, behaviors, as we discussed in the first call. So GMOs is another one of these toxic type of things that I consider an antigen. They also have been linked in some research to cancer and liver problems. So that's another.
Well, the latest study is worrisome, which is the study from the World Health Organization, which you're aware of, about glyphosate. What did that study say?
Glyphosate is the pesticide that they use in Roundup. So Roundup is their pesticide. And what they basically had just said lately is they're declaring that it is probably causing cancer in people. And so, as you said in the beginning, it's a controversial subject. Some people were always saying that it causes tumors in rats when they were doing studies on rats. And then there was the other side saying, absolutely not, get over it, it's totally safe, we're going to feed the world with it. And now the World Health Organization just came out, I believe it was a week or two ago, stating that it probably causes cancer. So this is huge, because the people like me saying, whoa, this stuff is just not good, is finally getting some support.
Yeah, and the whole principle of the GMOs is that they're supposedly resistant to glyphosate. In other words, you know, if you want to have a beautiful lawn, you don't spray your entire lawn with Roundup. Otherwise, you'll end up with no lawn. But if you have Roundup-resistant grass, you can spray your lawn saturated in glyphosate, just kill the weeds selectively, and your grass will survive. That's the principle of these crops. The problem is that the glyphosate, there are residues that may stay on the food and that may work their way into the food supply, and that probably isn't good for us.
Yes, yeah. And the other part of it is that they are, if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong here, but they're patenting, so they take soy and they're patenting it as a genetically modified soy. So they're making a soy in the lab as a genetically engineered, altering the DNA. And they're doing that, I believe, with corn. So we are getting a, you know, a non-natural, mm-hmm. you know, corn in our, in soy in our foods.
Right. So. Which is genetically altered. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, we evolved in sync with nature and some of these natural products, and by altering these products, they may have unpredictable effects on our bodies.
Yeah, exactly. So people might be asking, too, what sources they're in. This is the really hard part that you asked me in the beginning.
Exactly. So, you know, how can you safeguard against this?
Yeah, it's really hard because it's like sugar derivatives. So it's not just sugar or high fructose corn syrup or glucose. It's their derivatives. So you're getting words like dextrose, maltose, fructose, you know, high fructose corn syrup, it's not so many derivative. It's very, very hard to follow, you know, and it gets very confusing for the moms and the dads to be like, well, what has it in it, what doesn't have it in it?
Is it consequential when it's so chemically modified? So, for example, if you ate, you know, corn on the cob from a field that had been sprayed with glyphosate and it's GMO corn, okay, maybe. But, you know, if the corn has been through industrial processing to turn it into a completely different chemical, high fructose corn syrup, is there going to be that much of a threat of a GMO residue? I mean, I'll answer that question myself. As far as I know, we don't really know the answers to those questions.
Right. And like what some of my patients that are really strong about not eating them is like, I don't want to be the guinea pig to find out. I don't want my children to be the, you know, mm-hmm. we don't know the answer to that. It's tough. But what I do personally and what I tell people is that non-GMO project or the non-GMO seal, at least right now you can be pretty sure that that it's a pretty good organization. They're out to make they test the foods, and they'll tell you which brands or which type of foods are not genetically modified yet. You know.
Well, so what's weird is you actually have to go to the store with your mobile device in hand because you can't walk down the aisles and look for GMO-free foods. There's no such declaration on the label or on the box because it's not legal to claim that your food is GMO-free. That is so weird.
Yeah, that's a great point because that's the big controversy going throughout the whole country. I mean, state by state, they're all fighting this. And I watch Hawaii because Hawaii is amazing. Like they grow their own food, you know, so and they import a lot of food too, but they're very into growing. I've been out there with the fields and they are fighting to make sure that they can be GMO free island. And, also, like you said, they can label their foods. It would state on the food, this is a GMO corn or this is a GMO wheat. So as you're reading the ingredients, like you said, it's going to tell you. And tons of money from big, big, huge companies fighting to not allow us to have this, which is crazy, right?
And it's totally crazy because, look, it's one thing to, you know, to have a law that will ban GMO foods. You know, it's a free marketplace, and we have, like, cigarettes in the marketplace. We've got booze in the marketplace. We now have marijuana in the marketplace. There's all kinds of things where, hey, you know, you pays your money and you takes your chances. But at the very least, you should have labeling which will disclose what's in it and what's not, and you can vote with your consumer dollars. That's capitalism. It's these big capitalists are actually engaging in a restraint of the marketplace by preventing the labeling that would be truthful disclosure, and they can offer their wares, and some people may say, hey, I don't care. I'll have the GMO products; they're cheaper. I'm okay with that. Fine, you know, it's a free country; you can do yourself mm-hmm. in if you want to.
Yeah, and you have to say why. Like, why are these companies? They're dumping millions into for each state to fight this label, and like you said, if it's so what? So you put the label on it, and if people want to eat it, they eat it, and if people don't, they don't. And so I don't. It's mind-boggling as to why there's so much money.
It's a crazy situation, and there's even some legislation. There's actually two. There's competing legislation in Washington. There's like disclosure legislation, which will allow for truthful disclosure, and then there's also what's called dark legislation that will prevent disclosure. And, you know, unfortunately, it's pretty much a party line kind of thing. It seems Republicans are obstructionist about labeling, to my chagrin, because, you know, on other stands, you know, about, you know, freedom of access to supplements, they seem to be pretty good. But yeah, when it comes to this GMO matter, they got it all wrong.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're talking about everything. Like you just mentioned supplements, so it popped in my mind. Like when I buy supplements, I try to find the best high-quality source, and I want to look at, like, is it a GMO source that's in it? It could be in anything, like protein powder. I mean, we're talking candy today, but it's unfortunately GMOs cross everything, you know.
So on another subject, you know, one other peril that we didn't mention in part one, an ingredient that is common in candy, hydrogenated oil. That actually yep. is in many candies, palm kernel, soybean, corn oil, coconut oil. But these are sometimes hydrogenated. And also there's something funny going on with labeling there. You actually have to label a product as to whether it contains hydrogenated oil or trans fat. But there's a threshold, and the threshold, I think, is 1 gram. Is it one yeah. gram or 1/2 gram? I'm not sure. But you can screw around with serving size so that the serving size is so small
yep.
that the amount of hydrogenated fat that is under the radar can be fairly substantial. And if you know, it's like, I bet you can't eat just one, and if it's a, you know, if it's like a serving size is 4 potato chips, you're going to have a lot of hydrogenated fat in your system. So what's up with that?
Well, you're totally right. I mean, that's what they do. They kind of hide some of these words. They get around it, you know, a loophole or whatever. But what I don't like about hydrogenated fats, I teach this when we do, you know, trying to clean up a diet, eating healthier, definitely when you're talking about heart disease and you want to worry about fats. A hydrogenated fat creates havoc in the body. It actually acts like sludge in the arteries, and it can damage the arterial walls. It can form plaque. And it can increase bad cholesterol, heart disease, and your cancer risk. So these things act horribly in the bloodstream. And I call them quiet killers because they're secretly in so many foods, especially processed foods and man-made foods. And it's really one of the leading causes of heart disease today in the United States, but we really just kind of overlook it because, like you said, you don't even know sometimes how much is in there or if it's in there. And it's not like a good fat, which would behave very smooth and nicely in the artery and not like sludge and sticking to the walls and trying to rip it apart, you know. So it actually, a good fat behaves very well and a bad fat behaves, you know, bad. So.
Right. I mean, it gets incorporated in your cellular wall, which is actually composed mm-hmm. of supposedly good fats. But if your diet consists of these harmful fats, your cells will actually malfunction. So that's important. All right,
yeah.
Moving right along. TBHQ. You know, you got to have an advanced degree to be able to pronounce this. Tertiary butyl hydroquinone.
Very good.
Whoa. What's up with that?
It's a chemical preservative, and it's actually a form of butane. And I remember the first time I found this out, I was all
that's in
there.
That's in
like,
cigarette lighters.
Butane.
That's
yes.
in, that's in your Bic lighter, right?
Yeah. I was like, what? When I remember Googling that years ago going, oh, my goodness. And it purpose, again, is that foods can last longer on the shelf, which seems to be a common theme with food, very common in the fast foods and candy. And I have here in the article that in June 2008, there was an issue in carcinogenesis that it's been linked to the ability to make cancer cells resistant to chemotherapy. So that's pretty that's pretty strong what it can do to a cell. And I think the point is that it can change the DNA. It's one of those things that gets into the cellular level like you're talking about and creates a little havoc there.
That's a definition of a mutagen. You know, something is, it's mutagenic. It will actually alter, you know, create random modifications of your DNA, which ultimately can be part of the process by which you develop cancer.
Yeah, and it's in the Easter candy. It's in the Halloween candy. And so if you're looking at I'm pretty sure this one is in the Reese's or something like that.
Are seeing an epidemic of childhood cancer. It's really disturbing because you figure, okay, well, an adult who smokes or lives in a toxic environment, boozes it up, eats fast food all the time, and they get cancer at the age of, you know, 60 or something. Okay, well, that's the consequences of a bad lifestyle. But when we see tragic childhood cancer, all these childhood cancers, we wonder, you know, what's going into these kids?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And like you said, if they're mutagenic, then they're changing the cell, and the cells can go into a cancer state.
And there's another theme in toxicity, which is that adults actually have better and more robust detoxification mechanisms than kids. You know, you've only to, you know, see the reaction of a 10-year-old if a parent passes them a cigarette and says, "Hey, here, try this." That'll cure them for a lifetime of cigarette craving. But adults seem to have more robust detoxification ability. They're able to break down the toxins more readily, so that the pesticides, the chemicals, the junk actually may have a more profound effect on them.
Yeah, that's true.
Smaller bodies.
And I feel that in a lot of my articles that you'll read, I try to always relate it to the autism spectrum, and I always say, especially with these children, and what that means is that their nervous systems are already having a problem with integrating and self-regulating, and it doesn't behave and work, you know, with the world like a typical person or a typical child. So again, like something like this, like you're saying, they already don't detoxify things correctly, or like an adult would. They're not gonna they're gonna be affected by a toxin even more so, because the nervous system's just different.
So in your article, which I recommend very highly, you also reference something called PGPR, and here I go with my biochemist hat once again, polyglycerol pyrisinylate.
Very good.
I'm doing the best I can here, Lisa.
You're doing better than I would.
Yeah.
Another additive.
PGPR.
PGPR. Yeah, another one in candy, and again, a couple candies that I used to like. I was like, oh gosh, here it is. A common emulsifier in chocolate, and basically it's going to decrease the thickness of the chocolate mm-hmm. when I guess they're putting the milk and the sugar and the cocoa together.
Right.
It's using an emulsifier, and the thing with this is actually caused the birth of fake chocolate. And what I mean by that is real chocolate is usually using cocoa butter as your emulsifier, as your thicker. You know, butter thickens things up. You put it into the, you know, your cake mm-hmm. batter and your cookies. So they're using butter, but what they found out, if they can save some money by using this this additive mm-hmm. To thicken things up, a lot cheaper. But you're also putting something harmful in versus the cocoa butter, which is a better choice. And then what some of the companies like Hershey found up doing is, if they didn't use PGPR, they also could use soy lecithin and hydrogenated mm-hmm. oils that we just talked about instead of the cocoa butter.
And there is also some controversy about some of the other emulsifiers. Because they're often used in things like, Ready Whip and so on. Because if you put mm-hmm. those things in a can, basically you'll get liquid and fat. They'll separate. But emulsifiers keep those together. But those emulsifiers act on the gut to change the intestinal flora. They've got names like polyglycerol. I forget some of the names of those products. But they're mm-hmm. they're also potentially harmful.
Yeah. And that's what you're doing again. You know, you're going back to the gut and attacking the gut. And it's weird because I think the FDA did catch on to this. I had in the article about in 2007 where they started making sure that Hershey would put made with chocolate, that they had a certain amount of chocolate in there, because they realized what they were doing was kind of skimping on the cocoa butter and how much chocolate was in things.
Right. You also have a little bit of a critique of white chocolate. I mean, a lot of kids say, oh, white chocolate, that's kind of novel. And, mm-hmm. It's like some kids prefer vanilla and white chocolate looks like a preferable alternative. What's the knock on white chocolate?
Yeah, surprisingly, it's really not actually, doesn't have any chocolate in it. And that's because it doesn't have any cocoa. And
wow. So none of yeah. the benefits of cocoa.
Right. And that's exactly what's going to be my point, that because you don't have any of the cocoa or the cocoa liquor or even the cocoa butter, it's really just a bunch of, you know, nothing. So, you know, it's not something that I tell people to really eat, because when you're eating the dark chocolate, you're eating more and more nutritious things.
Mm-hmm.
White chocolate right now is, they want it to be at least 20% cocoa butter, 14% milk solids, and 3.5% milk fats, and no more than 55% sugar or other sweeteners. So really, it's just a bunch of harmful vegetable oils, no cocoa butter, no cocoa, and just, you know, like stuff like PGPR is in it, you know? That I was shocked when I read it, too. I don't know why I thought white chocolate was chocolate, but
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of not. It's chocolatey, sort of aromatic, but it's not like the real thing. It's kind of artificial.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That's what it is.
So, this is not in your article, but this is an issue for some patients, and it's carrageenan, which is also it's a mouthfeel agent. Again, because we're getting away from fat being the perfect emulsifier, the perfect mouthfeel thing, we make cheaper or fat-free products, and they tend to be using carrageenan.
Yeah, you know, at first, it's funny, when that first came out, I'd read articles that it wasn't too bad, and then I was reading about the sources of where it came from, and now it just seems to not be a good thing, unless I guess you can get a really pure source of it, but yeah, it's one of those things that they have manipulated to not be a good ingredient.
Okay.
I believe it's in a lot of gluten-free foods. So you have
it's
to
a lot
really
of gluten-free foods. It creates sort of body in the gluten-free foods.
Yeah, it's like a thickening agent, and they're starting to use it with certain foods. And at this point, it's one of those things that I have on my bad ingredient list.
And it has the potential to create inflammation in the intestine, which I think is the knock on it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where I think the, like you said, the research went. Because when it first came out, it was definitely one of those controversial things that I find exciting, because nutrition is always, you know, changing. Like I said, 10 years ago, it's different from today. And this was one that I was watching closely. But what concerns me in my office is we do have to put some kids, you know, gluten-free because of the gut issues. But that doesn't mean to eat every gluten-free thing that you see on the you know, in the aisles, because you have to turn the box over and read the ingredients and still see what is in the box, you know. So this was one of the ingredients I found common in gluten-free foods that I tell people, no, it's still not a good product just because it's gluten-free.
Right. So what's today's intelligent medicine call to action? What are some of the resources that people can and should access? First of all, your website, of course, drlisasolcenti.com, correct?
Yes.
And what will they find there?
Well, what I'd love to tell people today is that since it is April 1st, that it is Autism Awareness Month, as of tomorrow. And what I'm going to be doing is giving out weekly freebies. So you just have to go to the website. There's a post there. And tomorrow there'll be a Kids Healthy shopping list. So it's about 12 to 15 pages of food. It's not just fruits and vegetables. It's actually not fruit and vegetables. But what it is when you go into the food store, I kind of lead you into the right directions of products or brands that are safe to eat for your children. It's the products that I use with my kids. And I even lead you down the road that some of them might be, I talk about GMO and GMO supporters. I let you know that it's okay if you're going to use a company that might support GMOs. I kind of lead you through both worlds, because when you have a kid that's a picky eater, you might not be able to worry about, is the company supporting a GMO or not? So this list is really big. It goes through like the yogurts that are good, the milks that are good, the even the fruit snacks that might be good, a cereal that might be good. So like we said with Fruit Loops, I'm going to lead you over to a better choice. So if you can go to the website, there's a place where you can get your free copy of the shopping list. And then each week, next week, I'll have another fun freebie like that, and then the following week and the following week. So
that's drlisasolcenti.com.
Yes, if you go there, it'll be right there. And each week, come back and see the freebie, because they're all going to lead to, like, you know, living healthy and cleaning up your diet.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Lisa, and this has been most informative. And congratulations on your great work getting the word out about the perils that await us in the Easter basket and at the Seder table.
Yes,
but have a nice holiday nonetheless.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
You too. Take care.
Have a wonderful holiday. Take care now. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.